Welcome to the 288th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host, Patrick Winograd. In this edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions, a look back at week 12 action in college football and week 11 in the NFL, a look back at the last week in the NBA, and another look at action in college basketball. So let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com. Starting in college football, I went 3-1 in those predictions. In the NFL, I also went 3-1. In the NBA, I went 4-0. And then in college basketball, I went 2-2. Surprising flip of the last two leagues there, and I'll talk about that in a second. But that left me with a 12-4 overall record this week and a 1,177-745 actual overall record, which is a 61.2 winning percentage. But starting with college basketball, the league I did the worst in, number 13, Purdue beat number 2, Alabama, 87-78. A good home win, for the Boilermakers. Always expect them to be able to defend Mackey Arena, but, you know, maybe not in a matchup of this magnitude. And this time they were able to do it, somewhat surprising given their injuries. Probably skip over this later now that I talked about it in a little bit of a detailed manner. But, yeah, a good win for Purdue. Looking like the top team in the Big Ten at this point. I thought it was Indiana heading into the season, but now Purdue's kind of taking that crown with this victory, even if it's momentary. Indiana also looked good over the weekend against South Carolina, and I'll get into that later. But I predicted that one wrong. Number 23, Texas A&M, beat number 21, Ohio State, 78-64. I predicted that one correct, so chalk that up as a 1-1 tie for the SEC and Big Ten there. And then number 15, Marquette, beat Maryland, 78-74. Good win for Marquette there on the road to go to Maryland, to College Park, and get that victory. And then finally, number 22, St. John's beat New Mexico 85-71, which I also predicted correctly. So all in all, decent week. It's early in the season. Hard to figure out these teams. Two really close games. Purdue had a big outburst from C.J. Cox to win that game, a freshman. Made a few threes in a row and really swung that game. And then Marquette and Maryland, back and forth the whole way. Marquette takes the win. Really was undecided in terms of who to pick in either of those games. Guess I picked the wrong home team in each one. I guess it was right that the Big Ten will only get one win out of those three, but had a strong overall weekend that I'll get to later. But then moving on to the NBA, the Rockets beat the Clippers 125-104. Got that right. Thunder beat the Suns 99-83. Got that right. Warriors beat the Grizzlies 123-118. I got that right. And the Knicks beat the Nets 114-104. I'm honestly having trouble keeping track of which one of these were NBA in-season cup games. I believe the first three actually all were, because it seems like the Friday night games this week were all in-season tournament games. Now that I'm looking at it, yes, they were. All of them were NBA Cup group play. This stuff gets me confused, too. I'll never get used to it, honestly. It's just a weird format, but it just feels kind of unorthodox for the NBA to do it, but you know, it works in other sports, so why not? I like the creativity, though, adding to the format. A lot of leagues are too afraid to experiment, and I commend the NBA for actually doing that experimentation. And it's worked so far. It's been interesting, really interesting games to watch. And this week, I went 4-0 predicting those games. Then in the NFL, like I said, 3-1. The Eagles beat the Commanders 26-18 on Thursday Night Football. That was a really good win for the Eagles. Commanders still having their trouble beating teams above 500. They had their opportunity, and they didn't convert on it, excuse me. Then the Steelers beat the Ravens 18-16. I got that one wrong. I don't know what's going on with the Steelers, man. This is, like, worse than the Rays and the Brewers and MLB. Like, this team should not be winning games as much as it is. Justin Tucker missed two field goals. The Ravens could have tied it up at the end of the game and just missed the two-point conversion on a busted play. Everything seems to go right for the Steelers. And they won this game by kicking six field goals and without scoring a touchdown. So that's crazy. That's the game I got wrong. Honestly, not that mad about it. But the Bills beat the Chiefs 30-21. Josh Allen continuing to play well against Mahomes in this kind of Manning versus Brady-esque rivalry. But we'll see if they can do it again in the playoffs. The Chiefs finally suffered their first loss of the year. That is why I predicted that, because they were going to lose at some point. I mean, this team is not imperfect at all. It's not perfect at all. They are definitely imperfect. And then the Chargers beat the Bengals 34-27, despite Joe Burrow's best effort at a comeback. Good win for the Chargers. They're at 7-3 now on the season. Jim Harbaugh orchestrating a really quick turnaround of that team. didn't seem like it would take much, and it really hasn't. Then in college football, number 12 Georgia beat number 7 Tennessee 31-17. We'll have to see what happens with the playoff rankings with that result swinging things, and a lot, basically four teams in the SEC right next to each other that have all played each other to various degrees. Georgia having played, I think, all of those four teams, they already, or other than themselves, obviously, they played Alabama, they played Tennessee, they played Ole Miss. So you can go off of head-to-head as much as you want for them, but it's kind of hard to do considering they've beaten some of those teams and lost to others, and then Tennessee beat Alabama, but Georgia beat Tennessee, but Alabama beat Georgia. It's confusing, is my point. Then number 21 South Carolina beat number 23 Missouri 34-30. Missouri played better than what Vegas had them playing at and what I had them playing at. I had this game on here because I wanted to prove a point that South Carolina should be ranked, Missouri shouldn't be ranked. I've said that for weeks. But Missouri actually had the lead and at the end of this game. South Carolina had taken control. They were up 21-9, but they choked that lead. Good for Missouri to make a comeback. But great teams pull games out like that, and South Carolina did find a way to pull it out, and now they keep their playoff hopes alive. Slim, but still alive. And, you know, they have Clemson on their schedule, so they do have a quality win to get, and they're already going to be probably in the top 20. Definitely in the top 20, actually, looking at other results. So they're not too far off, but it would be unlikely. But we'll see. Then Arizona State beat number 16 Kansas State 24-14 on the road. This was the game I got wrong. Wasn't expecting that one at all. But Kenny Dillingham's squad playing very good football, up to 8-2 on the season now. I didn't have them ranked, so I can't criticize the fact that they weren't ranked myself. But they better be ranked this week is all I have to say. This is definitely a top 25 team after what they did to Kansas State this weekend. And then finally, number 25 Tulane beat Navy 35-0. This was a prove-it game for Tulane, and they passed that test with flying colors. They definitely proved that they are for real. I mean, this game was supposed to be at least close, and they just blew Navy out. You know, it was a 7.5-point line, and you thought, wow, Navy was ranked at some point this season, Tulane ranked now, but, you know, touchdown favorites on the road, that seems harsh. And then you look at this game, and you go, wow, it wasn't even enough. Tulane just dismantled Navy, so a good week for them, a good week for me overall in predictions. We'll move on now to a look at college football with the significant action from Week 12. Starting with a game that was not in my weekend predictions, actually. Florida beat number 22 LSU. Man, this LSU team has been so disappointing this year. I thought that they would figure it out on defense and be actually a playoff team. I had them sneaking into the playoffs if you look at my overall season predictions, but they are nowhere close to a playoff-level team. They are, frankly, I'd say the laughing stock of the contenders in the SEC, or at least the perceived preseason contenders. This team, I mean, going back to the loss to USC, you know, that was a loss that could have been avoided. And at the time, it looked like it was an okay loss. It was a good loss. Now that loss looks embarrassing. This loss to Florida, I mean, you know, Billy Napier had already, you know, been given the security that his job was going to be kept after the season. I didn't agree with the decision anyway, but, you know, I mean, the guy, he got blown out by Texas right after that, and it just looked terrible. But then he comes back this week. They claim this victory easily, and I'm just saying, I mean, Brian Kelly can't get fired because of his buyout, but at this point, maybe he's the one who's worthy of getting fired more so than Billy Napier. This team is just an embarrassment. I mean, you got players screaming at Kelly on the sideline. You have Kelly screaming at players on the sideline. Everything is just bad for LSU. There's a word that I would use to describe this team that's akin to dumpster fire, but a little less PG. Can't use it on this podcast, but that's what LSU is right now. Then, moving on to the rest of the SEC, in this three-team bunch-up between the rankings of 21 and 23, South Carolina asserted itself as the top of the bunch, as they were the only ones of those three to not lose this weekend. They get that win 34-30 over Missouri, like I discussed. They lost the lead very late in this game. Clutch touchdown on 4th and 5 by Luther Burden and the Missouri Tigers, but South Carolina took it back down the field with less than a minute left. They got their own minute drive off, won the game, and the rest is history. We'll see where South Carolina is ranked this week. I would argue they have a chance to be ranked ahead of a few of the teams I'm about to talk about. Actually, the next three teams I'm about to talk about, they will be ranked ahead of. That's because Louisville, Washington State, and Kansas State all lost. Teams ranked 19th, 18th, and 16th. I'll go to Louisville first. They lost to Stanford 38-35. That is a loss that you cannot recover from. Nowhere near the playoff conversation anymore. Definitely not a ranked team at 6-4. Four losses is just too many to be a ranked team, especially when one of them is to one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in the ACC. Washington State, the number 18 team in the country, lost by the same score, but they lost on the road to New Mexico, a team that, you know, they've shown a lot of offensive firepower throughout the year, but they can't stop anybody either. So Washington State, this is a game they should have won. I mean, point blank, it's a very simple equation for me. They did score, don't get me wrong. They put up points, but not enough. They lost 38-35, same score as Stanford. New Mexico moves to 5-6 on the season, keeping a slim chance at a bowl game berth alive. And then finally, Arizona State beat number 16, Kansas State, 24-14. We mentioned that in weekend predictions. I talked about Kenny Dillingham's squad. Arizona State, speaking of those rankings, I mean, they'll be ahead of all of those teams that I discussed that have lost so far. They'll be ahead of Missouri and Louisville and Washington State and Kansas State. You could argue they could get up there maybe in the 18-19 range themselves, even though they were unranked this week. It's very, very possible. And I wouldn't disagree with it if that's what the decision ended up being. The Coaches Bowl has them at 21, just behind South Carolina, Tulane, and Arizona State. Maybe the playoff probably rolls with something similar to that. It wouldn't really surprise me. So maybe more in that 20-21 range, but for sure somewhere in that mix with how well they've been playing and the win they just claimed over the weekend. But speaking of those losses, like I said, that would allow South Carolina to move ahead of those teams. They might also move ahead of Clemson, because Clemson only beat Pitt 24-20. I get it. It was on the road. It was a tough matchup. Pitt was ranked very recently, obviously. But at the same time, Pitt was playing with a backup quarterback. And you could easily argue Clemson got lucky that they won this game. I think they did. So you put all those things together, and you can really just say, you know, that wasn't a good result at all this weekend for Clemson. Probably won't boot them below South Carolina, but I could see the playoff committee doing it just on the basis that South Carolina got a ranked victory over Missouri, although it shouldn't have been a ranked victory because Missouri shouldn't have been ranked in the first place. But that's a different story. And also, SEC bias. Why not rank South Carolina over Clemson? They're in the best conference, right? That same conference that has dropped a game to Georgia State and USC and Cal. Yeah, we don't need to go down that road, though. I think I've made this very clear what my position on that whole argument is. And speaking of quality losses, number 12 Georgia beat number 7 Tennessee 31-17. Both these teams now 8-2 on the season. Georgia should be in the playoff conversation. Don't get me wrong. They should have been last week. I'm totally okay with their ranking at 12. I'm totally okay with them being as high as 6 in the next ranking. Wouldn't surprise me. That's where I have them. It all depends on if you want to throw those four teams into a pile of Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Alabama. And then how much you value individual head-to-heads within that, because that would put Alabama ahead of Georgia because Alabama beat Georgia, but at the same time, Tennessee beat Alabama, and then if you put Tennessee out of Alabama, then you got to put Georgia out of Alabama. So it's just a giant mess. And then, you know, Ole Miss beat Georgia by 18 last week. So theoretically, they might be the top team in that bunch. I'm not inclined to say that's entirely wrong just yet. For now, I think I do have Georgia ahead of them, but I can easily be convinced otherwise. I just finally saw what I needed to see out of Carson Beck, so I moved them up, and they got this victory, so I moved them up. But beyond that, and I was a little higher in Tennessee than most teams, but or most people. But then SMU, they played a close game. They won 38-28 against Boston College. A team that's been up and down all year long, has made a quarterback change at this point. Things are weird at Boston College, but they are 5-5. They're a tough out, but they're not necessarily a threat to really win games. They just will play teams close and, you know, make you sweat a little bit. And if you don't have that experience, if you're not ready for those big moments, you might crumble. But SMU, they didn't crumble. They won. They're still number 14 for now. Obviously, playoff rankings aren't out yet, but should be moving up. Especially because a team named BYU lost. Now, this is interesting because BYU is the number 6 team in the country according to the playoff last weekend. SMU lost to BYU earlier this season. Now, both of them are 9-1. SMU undefeated in their conference. BYU, though, one loss after barely escaping at Utah, and that one loss is to 4-6 Kansas. Now, I know that even I had Kansas in the top 20 preseason, But we're not talking about preseason expectations anymore. This is the whole reason why Indiana shouldn't be ranked so low. It's not about the preseason. We're 10 games into the season. This Kansas team might not make a bowl game. They have to win out to make a bowl game. They've already upset two teams to even stay in that conversation. They were 2-6 before playing Iowa State and BYU. And frankly, now Kansas is the bane of the Big 12's existence because they win every game in basketball, and all of a sudden they finally have some teams that have great seasons in football with the college football playoff expanding to 12 teams and giving those teams an opportunity to make the playoff. And who comes along and ruins it? It's Kansas. But in actuality, though, Kansas, 17-13 victory over number 6 BYU on the road, which seems crazy, but at the same time, Vegas said this is a 2.5-point game, or 2.5-point favorite for BYU. That shows that metrics and the books and people who, you know, don't necessarily just look at record have no faith in this BYU team. And frankly, the way they played against Utah and the way they played in this game, I'm starting to lose that faith myself. They've clawed and scraped their way to close victories all year long, and it's now starting to come back to bite them at the end of the year, it seems. If they still go into the end of the season, though, when they're 11-1 and their only losses are to Kansas and to Colorado in the Big 12 championship game, they should be a playoff team. That's what I should say. I mean, I have to get that out there. That I do firmly believe. They shouldn't be relegated out of the playoff for some two-loss SEC team. I just think that's stupid, even if those teams go, you know, even an 11-1 Penn State team. I mean, to be honest, I do think Penn State's probably better, but resume-wise, you know, 11-1 with really no quality wins, only a win over USC would be their best win. I guess at Minnesota, if they're able to get that win this week, would become their best win, maybe. But, you know, if that's the resume you're comparing to a team that made their conference championship game in a good conference, I mean, yes, the Big Ten is great at the top, but Penn State didn't have to play any of those teams, and they lost the one time they did. So, you know, you can go back and forth on this forever. When they eventually do have to make the decision on the playoff and what 12 teams are going to make it, I'm sure we'll have plenty of dialogue. At this point, I'm going to cut myself off from it because the last two games, they aren't really relevant to that discussion anyway. I guess number 3, Texas, you know, that's always an interesting discussion of whether they're overrated or not, how much we're relying on the eye test because they don't really have quality wins, et cetera, et cetera. But Texas won 20-10 at Arkansas. Not a very impressive performance. You could make the argument that the way they looked in the eye test this week could actually allow them to move down because this is the first week they haven't looked dominant in a very long time, other than their loss to Georgia. This wasn't a good look at all. I mean, pretty simply, Arkansas hasn't been playing amazing. I mean, yeah, they're 5-5, they're 3-4 in the SEC, so they're middle of the pack, but they're not good enough to be in a game with Texas like this. They shouldn't be, at least. And you could say the same thing for number 1, Oregon, who beat Wisconsin 16-13. They had a 6-0 lead at the end of the first half. They were down 10-6 at the half. They were down 13-6 going into the fourth quarter. They scored 10 unanswered and escaped with the victory. The one difference between Oregon and Texas, though, Oregon has the win over Ohio State. And honestly, I would say the win at Michigan. I mean, look, Texas, that's probably their second best win, too. So both of those teams relying on that win at Michigan to carry some weight that, frankly, it probably shouldn't. But the big difference is Oregon still hasn't lost a game. Texas has lost. That's a fact. Oregon's 11-0. Texas is 9-1. Simple math. Oregon's really the only undefeated team left in the country, other than Indiana, that really feels like they have a decent chance of being a title contender. No offense to Army, but I don't exactly feel like they're that caliber of a team. But we'll have to see what happens with Indiana this weekend. Obviously, they play Ohio State on the road, the big matchup in the Big Ten. I think Indiana is a double-digit underdog in that game, which is kind of surprising, kind of not surprising. I really do think Indiana has a better shot than people are giving them in that game. I think if that game was in Bloomington, I would be picking Ohio State to lose that game to Indiana. Because it's in Columbus, I'm picking Ohio State. But I'm a lot more tentative about it than I think I normally would be for a 10-11-point line or whatever it happens to be. But that's all we have for college football this week. A very, very interesting week filled with upsets. And now we'll turn to the NFL with a weekly review for Week 11. Most of these games we already talked about in the weekend predictions, so not too detailed in terms of my rundowns of each of these, but the Chargers beat the Bengals. discuss that. On weekend predictions, like I said, Joe Burrow with a furious comeback. The Chargers up 24-6 at the half, but the Bengals making it close and actually requiring a J.K. Dobbins game-winning run with about 20 seconds left in the game. So much closer than it should have been, but the Chargers will say a win is a win. Then the Bills beat the Chiefs 30-21. Really just a pretty standard game here. I mean, the Bills did look like the better team, I think, is my takeaway, which is something that maybe people didn't expect. So I guess that's definitely a positive for Buffalo. They played really well. Talked about it in my weekend predictions. It's this old matchup. It's really the Manning versus Brady of this little mini era of football. I don't want to call it its own separate era because Manning and Brady both actually, well, maybe not Manning as much, but Brady obviously overlapped with Mahomes, so it's kind of unfair to say it's a different era. But, you know, this little mini era, Mahomes-Allen has kind of become that Manning-Brady. People thought it would be Burrow and Mahomes, but look, the Bengals have not been, they haven't been good enough to be considered for that conversation, in my opinion. But anyway, Bills won this matchup. See what happens in the postseason. It feels like they're on a crash course. They're always on a crash course, but this year especially feels like that. The Bills feel like they've been kind of the favorites in terms of, you know, what Vegas may think, what the general perception is. But then the Chiefs just keep winning, so you can't really discount them either. They're really the only two teams in the league that feel like they don't have many flaws. They don't drop random games like the Ravens do. The Steelers at 8-2 just doesn't feel real in terms of, is that team actually 8-2 level good? I don't really think so. And then every other team that you want to talk about as a contender is probably really in the NFC anyway. So more worth talking about just the Bills and the Chiefs, but it was a great game. And speaking of NFC contenders, everybody's waiting for the 49ers to kick it into high gear. They still haven't. Just hasn't happened yet. They lost again, this time to the Seahawks. Now they are at 5-5. The Rams are at 5-5. They being, by the way, the Seahawks and the Niners. And then you have the Cardinals leading that division at 6-4. So Seahawks, Niners, and Rams chasing down the Cardinals. I would say this is an unfamiliar story, but it's actually not. The Cardinals have been at the top or near the top of this division multiple times in recent years, but they have not closed out the end of the season. That has been their issue. So they are going to have to go out and prove everybody wrong and prove that they can do that this year. Otherwise, they'll be in for more disappointment. But for now, it's the Cardinals in the lead, these two teams right behind. Niners just haven't looked the championship form that we've expected them to get to at any point yet this season. And that's kind of disappointing. But meanwhile, team that has been in a lot better form than people expected them to be, but not a championship contender, the Broncos, they moved to 6-5 with a victory over the Falcons. A 38-6 victory, I should mention. So a very good result for them. The Falcons continue to need to hate Sean Payton more and more every day. Ruining this season as well, even with a much worse roster than anything he ever had on the Saints that was ruining Falcon seasons back in the day. That's not really back in the day. That was like 6 or 7 years ago, but still. Then you have the Steelers. They beat the Ravens, whatever devil magic they're using like I talked about. I don't know what's going on, but they're doing something, and I don't like it. It's very, 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 very shady. I'm kidding, of course. You know, the Steelers are just one of those teams that just, there's a team every year that feels like they win very gritty and very scrappy, and, you know, they're the team that inevitably doesn't really do much in the postseason, but they look great throughout the regular season anyway, and they have a good record. Or maybe they don't look great, but they have a great record on paper. They don't actually look great while getting those wins. Then you have the Colts, who are now at 5-6 after defeating the Jets, who are 3-8 on the season. Colts, 28-27, they take this one. Anthony Richardson thoroughly outplayed Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers just hasn't been Aaron Rodgers this season. I think at this point I've said it enough that it might be beating a dead horse. But I really do feel the need to reiterate that, because for some reason people can't get it through their thick skulls that the reason why the Jets are bad is not coaching, it's not the weapons around him, it's not the defense, it's him. Period. End of story. It starts, it ends with him. Not only because his own play hasn't been good enough, but he's the reason they got all these guys. He's the reason they went out and used resources to get every single person that they have, to get Alan Lazard, to get Devontae Adams. And now not only are they terrible this year, but they're screwed for the future as well. So, good luck, Jets fans. I know you're used to it already, but It doesn't look good. Doesn't look any better than it has ever looked. Frankly, it looks probably worse. And then, speaking of looking worse, it's never looked better. The Lions fans, these guys, they're really used to the grind. They have been awful all the time, and we know this. But this year they're not. They're 9-1, 52-6 victory over the Jaguars. I don't have comments on this because this game wasn't closed. I just needed to mention the fact that the Lions won by this big of a margin. There have been weeks where they've won by respectable, comfortable margins to the point where I don't talk about them because it's what you expect. When they put out these performances, it has to be talked about, even if I just highlight how bad the score was for the losing team, which is what I just did. Then you got the Packers beating the Bears 20-19. 7-3 is their record on the season. Now the Bears dropped to 4-6. Worth noting that the Packers definitely committed a penalty on the game-winning field goal block. The Bears lost this game, in case you didn't know, on a heartbreaking end-of-game scenario again. Just like the Commanders one where there was a Hail Mary that they gave up, this time final play, but it was in the Bears' hands. They had a field goal for the win. Cairo Santos put it up, and it got blocked. The player who blocked it, though, ran directly over the center. That is a penalty. You can't go through the center until the center has lifted his head. It was missed by the referees. Kind of ironic that that was missed by the referees, but then in the Texans' win tonight over the Cowboys, which I'm not going to talk about, but that did happen. They called the head slap on a field goal play by the Texans, I think. They were trying to block Brandon Aubrey's field goal, and they slapped the center in the head, and that was called, but they didn't call it in this game when the game was on the line. So I really feel bad for Bears fans. They really should be 6-4. I would argue that this bad call and then Jalen Johnson gloating on that final Hail Mary and just the Bears not knowing how to defend a Hail Mary, that might be more their fault, so maybe they should be only 5-5, but they at least should have won one of these two games, and I feel bad for them because of that. But they're also used to the suffering. Then you have the Eagles. They went 8-2. They're 8-2 now. They are not used to suffering. They have been on a very long stretch of good play, good sustained play as a franchise. They've had their down years here and there, but it typically doesn't take them long to bounce back. They win this one 26-18 over the Commanders on Thursday Night Football. Talked about that earlier in my predictions. Great win for the Eagles. They seize control of this division. And all of a sudden, it's looking exactly pretty much like we thought it would be preseason, maybe if you switch the Commanders and the Cowboys positioning. But let's change gears and move on to basketball now. We're actually going to start with college basketball because as I'm recording this, I'm actually waiting for NBA games to end for me to be able to actually finish this podcast. But I unfortunately have too many things to do tomorrow morning, so I couldn't wait until the morning to do it. So I'm going to wait for this Warriors game to end to finish the whole podcast. But in the meantime, every game that's relevant in college basketball has ended, so we can talk about my favorite sport, and I'm going to switch up the order, so we'll go to college basketball now. Starting with action in the Champions Classic, all the way from last Tuesday, number one Kansas beat Michigan State 77-69. Michigan State fans, I think, should be happy with that performance. I really didn't think they were going to keep that one incredibly close, and really it was close throughout. It took a really late Kansas run. Michigan State came back to tie it, even took the lead a few times in the second half. So a good result for Michigan State, to be honest, and for Kansas, maybe not as dominant as a number one team would like to be, but you know what? You beat Michigan State, you beat Michigan State. You're going to be happy about it either way. Always going to be a team that has a lot of talent, very well coached. So getting that win, very, very helpful. Anytime you win a game, frankly, in the Champions Classic in general, it's a pretty good sign of things to come. And speaking of that, number 19 Kentucky beat number 6 Duke 77-72. Congratulations to Kentucky on claiming this victory. They look really, really, really good to start the season, and it's no surprise considering all the talent they brought in from the transfer portal, but these guys have gelled really, really quickly. Otega Owe looks as good, if not better, than what he looked like at Oklahoma. Mari Williams has proven that he can do his thing on any level. It doesn't matter. Andrew Carr has looked great transferring over from Wake Forest. I expected him to take a back seat. He's actually probably leapt into more of a leadership role offensively. I could go on and on about this team. They just look very, very good. For Duke, look like a team that's pretty young early in the year. It's about what you would expect, but Duke They do lose this game. Cooper Flagg turned it over twice in the final 12 seconds. Had a very good game overall, though. And I'm not worried long-term about this team at all. They just need to come into their own a little bit more as the season goes on. Then you have UCF, who beat FAU 100-94. This team doesn't play any defense whatsoever. And I'm speaking really about both teams, but especially about FAU. UCF at least had a closer game against A&M where it was a little bit slower and they kind of played in that style and they've proven that. This FAU team is all chaos all the time, and I love watching it. I love watching teams like this. I can't lie. I watch too much Big Ten basketball where, you know, you get your 68-64s out there on more often than you should, I think is what I would say, for how advanced college basketball offenses have gotten. It's very refreshing to see a team come out here and score 90-plus every game. Every once in a while, and that's exactly what FAU is doing. And honestly, they're better than they should be in year one without Dusty May. We'll see what happens later in the season, but for now, looking pretty good. And speaking of Big Ten rock fights, North Texas beats Minnesota 54-51. My only takeaway from this game is Minnesota and Washington are the only two teams I've looked at this thus far in the season and have said, look, the Big Ten might get damn near every team into the tournament. These two are not going to be a part of that. I mean, it is just, these teams are just not that good. I know Washington has great Osabor. He had like a 23.19 rebound game or something against UMass Lowell. So like, yes, they do have a guy that can go out there and win them a game single-handedly. And Dawson Garcia can be that guy for Minnesota when he's at his best. He's not as good as great Osabor at his best, but at the same time, still a really, really good player. I'm an all-conference level player. I just don't see it with this Minnesota team. I don't see how they're going to compete. I know that metrics have them maybe, you know, 7-13, 6-14 in conference. I don't even think they're getting to that level because I think teams are going to take them seriously just because they have to. But I don't think they have the level of talent to really beat any teams that are above them other than really the bottom of the barrel unless the teams really just are caught off guard, and I just don't think that's going to happen. When every team only plays each other pretty much once, except for, you know, two or three teams. I just don't see it happening. But then, talked about Kentucky earlier. Now we're going to talk about Calipari's team. Number 18, Arkansas. They beat Troy 65-49. Not the bounce back you wanted to see after their game against Baylor, their loss against Baylor, but a win is a win. This team does not look clean at all. They don't look like a top 25 team. There are definitely other teams that I can think of that have played better so far, and I think will continue to play better than Arkansas. But for now, they're still ranked. Won't be long. Then you have Arizona State beating Grand Canyon 87-76. Fun matchup that these teams have started to play. I mean, their campuses are close enough. Like, this should be a thing that continues. It's good for Grand Canyon because they get a power conference opponent that's not afraid to actually play them. And then for Arizona State, it's a good tune-up matchup, you know? This is not playing, you know, another team from a power conference, but it is playing a team that kind of level. And you know you're going to have a competitive game, so it is worth playing, in my opinion. Similar to kind of San Diego State against Gonzaga in terms of the level differences between the teams. Maybe even the opposite because Grand Canyon might be better than Arizona State, but it's an interesting thing to ponder. I just like the matchup. Another matchup I liked, Big 12 teams going everywhere and playing random teams, same as the SEC, especially the SEC, actually. But LSU beat Kansas State 76-65. Kansas State hosted this game. LSU dominated it. That's not a good result for Kansas State at all. This is a team that was viewed as a borderline top 25 team before the season by many with all the transfers they got, Doug McDaniel, Coleman Hawkins. That's not the result, though, at all. LSU, a team that was picked very low in the SEC preseason poll, is, or just frankly, I mean, not is. They came out and dominated this game. They deserve the win, for sure. They went on the road, and they took it straight from Kansas State. And then, continuing that theme of the Big 12, TCU went on the road to play Michigan. Michigan beat them 76-64. Much-needed bounce back for Michigan after the sloppy, turnover-filled, offensive rebound-given-up-filled game against Wake Forest. They did the same exact thing against TCU, but they were lucky to get away with it this time. Definitely something to track going forward. That'll really cap that team if they can't figure out those two issues with the turnovers and the defensive rebounding, especially when you have three guys at 6'10 or above. You got to be able to rebound better than that. But anyway, sticking in the Big Ten, Number 13, Purdue beat number 2, Alabama, 87-78. Talked about that. Wisconsin beat number 9, Arizona, 103-88. We talked about that, too. And Marquette beat Maryland, 78-74, once again. Talked about all three of those games, so I won't go into any more depth than I already have. Texas A&M also beat Ohio State, if we need to cover that one. And then one final matchup in the SEC. Number 20, Florida beat Florida State, definitely not a ranked team, 87-74. Just a good win for Florida. You know, this is a team that, you know, every team for once had a challenge this weekend, I will say. Pretty much everybody played somebody that was decent. Or they did last week at some point, like Kansas, for example. So everybody played big games on Friday and Saturday, some of them on Sunday too. So I appreciate Florida for going out and playing this rivalry game, and they did get the victory. I don't think Florida State's very good, but at the same time, they played a power conference opponent. They beat a power conference opponent. There aren't many teams that can say that so far this season. Then you have Virginia. They beat Villanova 70-60. This one in a neutral site event, but Virginia looking good even without Jay Wright sticking in that state. I will for the next two matchups. Penn State beat Virginia Tech 86-64. Look, Penn State is really rising the potential for the Big Ten to be a top-to-bottom dominant conference. I mean, Penn State was supposed to be one of the bottom three or four teams in the conference, I would argue. And they're not playing like it at all. I mean, they are playing like a legit tournament team. I really do think that right now they are a tournament team. They're playing like one for sure. And this win definitely proved that. A 22-point victory over at least a middle-of-the-pack team in the ACC, from what I know. Then Pitt beat West Virginia 86-62. Speaking of teams that are going out there and kind of raising the levels of their conference, the question is who's going to be third in the ACC? We know Duke and UNC are going to be number one and number two most likely, but who's going to be that third team? Is it Virginia? Is it Wake Forest? Or is it Pitt? Right now, it's looking like it's Pitt. Wake had a slip-up that I'll talk about in a second that kind of reduced their chances in my mind, but Pitt looked great in this game. They've looked great all season long. They moved to 5-0 tonight, actually, with another win. And then I'll go straight to it now. Wake Forest lost to Xavier 75-60. Xavier's a very, very good team. Should be a ranked team, in my opinion. So this was not a surprising loss for Wake Forest to take on the road. But at the same time, a loss is a loss, and you don't want to be that. You don't want to do that if you're Wake Forest. Pitt, like I said, kind of moving into that void as that number three team. Wake Forest was the team picked preseason to do that. Then number 16, Indiana beat South Carolina 87-71. That was the last Big Ten matchup I wanted to talk about. They're looking good as a potential conference contender there. Looking at the West Coast Conference and Mountain West teams, Nevada beat Santa Clara 85-59. That Nevada team looking very good. Beat Washington by 10 earlier in the season. So two pretty strong victories for them so far. St. Mary's beat Nebraska at the Sanford Pentagon 77-74. That's a pretty good result for St. Mary's. I don't know necessarily that Nebraska's a tournament team. They're at least going to be somewhere in that conversation, I would assume. Maybe not a team that, you know, ends up squarely on the bubble, but at least in that conversation by the end of the season. So it's a good win for St. Mary's to have on their resume. Then you have St. John's, number 22 team in the country. They beat New Mexico 85-71 in the Patino Bowl. Not much more to say about that. Obviously, that one in my weekend predictions. As well. So a good game for St. John's to get that victory. So, very good win for St. John's. And then, I'm going to skip a game because I realized I never talked about the chaos of Wisconsin. You know, they beat Arizona. I forgot they actually weren't in my weekend predictions. This game was the weirdest game I've ever seen. 63 total fouls called and just a ton of chaos. And then Wisconsin did it again. They relied on the free throw line, and they beat University of Texas Rio Grande Valley. They probably shouldn't have won this game either. They only won 87-84. That's a really rough That's a really rough showing after you just beat a top 10 team 103-88. If anything, it just makes me question Arizona. I'm not sold on Wisconsin. I won't be for a while, but really, really questioning Arizona right now. And you know what? Good for Wisconsin to get this start, to end up being ranked number 19 now, but I don't know if it's going to last. Then last three matchups, I'll just breeze through them quickly. Boise State beat Clemson 84-71, a great win for them. Mississippi State beat Utah 78-73, another great win for them. All these teams really bubble teams. And then finally, maybe the most important matchup, that I've talked about in a little bit. Number three, Gonzaga beat San Diego State 80-67. San Diego State, not the team they've been in the past. Gonzaga, though, looking like actually one of the best teams in the country. I do think this is a real, real title contender here. This team is very, very good and very, very scary. They dismantled Baylor earlier in the week, or earlier in the season, and then they also did this. San Diego State on the road. Just good look for a team. I mean, this is a very, very good team. They're always supposed to be very good. So, good look for Gonzaga. Looking for them to continue that in the future. But I will move on now to look at the NBA action of the last week, starting in the Eastern Conference. This will be a quick look because this podcast has dragged on for far too long, to be quite honest. But we'll start in the Eastern Conference, where somehow the Cavs still haven't lost a game. They're 15-0 on the season. They're narrowly trailed by the Celtics, who are 11-3. But what a start for the Cavs, man. I mean, there's nothing else to say. Honestly, there's nothing positive to say about this conference unless you're talking about these top four teams, the Celtics, the Cavs, and the Magic and the Knicks now. But look, a great start to the season for the Cavs. I mean, I don't know how long they could keep this up, but 15-0 is crazy. So good for them. Celtics also have a point differential that's double digits. There are four teams in the NBA with that distinction. It's the Cavs, the Celtics, the Warriors, and the Thunder, although the Warriors might lose that title if they lose this game to the Clippers. I'm actually not going to wait for it to end to finish this podcast, but they're currently trailing by 7 in the fourth quarter, so they might be 10-3 by the end of this. They're currently 10-2, but anyway, Celtics sitting at 11-3. The Magic sitting at 9-6 after a six-game winning streak. Franz Wagner has led the charge on that one. He's been amazing recently. And then the Knicks, they're at 8-6. They've had some theatrics of their own. They've won some games, and that's exactly what you'd expect. The rest of the East, though, pretty weak. The Heat at 6-7, Pistons at 7-9. Hawks and Pacers at 6-8, Bulls at 6-9. You got the Hornets at 5-8. The Nets have finally fallen off. They're at 5-9 with the Bucks, who've started to heat up a little bit, but still aren't great. And then of course the teams tied at the bottom, the Raptors and the Wizards at 3-12 and 2-11. And then of course the weird team that's still down here, the Sixers. Embiid did come back, but they still haven't gotten it into high gear. Paul George is also back, but now Tyrese Maxey's out. So you know. The Sixers just can't get healthy. They can't stay healthy. They can't develop any cohesion, and they can't develop any chemistry as a result. And with no chemistry, you're not going to win many games. That's where the Sixers are at. And then, in the Western Conference, where all the good teams are, first off, you have the Warriors and the Thunder. The Warriors currently at 10-2 would move to 10-3 if they lost this game. That's currently in progress. And then the Thunder at 11-3. So they would take over first place, sole possession. But the Thunder, for sure, definitely a top team. I would argue the top team in the West, in my opinion. But not far behind them are the Los Angeles Lakers, who have won five games in a row. They're 9-4 on the season. The Suns, who are at 9-6. The Rockets, who are at 10-5. That's a better record than 9-6. I'm sorry I skipped over them, but really view the Suns as more of a threatening contender. They've just hit a little bit of a rough patch. Have lost four in a row. And then the Nuggets are at 7-5 to close out the teams that, if the season ended today, would be safely in the playoffs with no play-in bracket. And the play-in bracket currently would be a ton of chaos because it would be the Timberwolves, the Grizzlies, and the Sacramento Kings, who are all 8-6 on the season. Actually, the Kings are now 8-7 because they lost to the Hornets. That just hasn't updated quite yet on ESPN for whatever reason, but they did lose that game. And that also means that the Hawks are at 7-8, and I should have checked that first. But anyway, all those teams, though, very solid teams. The Grizzlies, the Nuggets, and the Timberwolves would be in the three-way tie for the 6, 7, and 8 spots. Don't know how the tiebreakers shake out now. Then the Clippers would be up there at 8-7, tied with the Kings for the 9th and the 10th spots. And then finally you'd get to the Mavs, the defending Western Conference champions, at 7-7. And then the two teams now on the outside looking in that maybe are a little bit too young to be considered real contenders, the Spurs and the Blazers at 6-8, the Pelicans at 4-10, and then the Jazz rounding things up at 3-10. But that is all we have for this episode of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next episode of the podcast, which will be on Tuesday, November 26th, where we will look back at my weekend predictions, review week 13 of college football, week 12 of the NFL, and we will talk again about basketball with a much longer review of the NBA for sure. I'll have more time to pay attention to it now. And of course, college basketball. But in the meantime, be sure to check out my additional content, including our college football rankings, which are posted weekly throughout the season on Monday mornings. my weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted weekly on Wednesdays throughout the season, and my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday. All of that on social media at 4thand24 on Twitter and Instagram, and some of that content on our website, 4thand24.com. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.